Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Global Producers Close In on Output Deal, by Javier Blas and Grant Smith, Bloomberg. The world's largest oil producers are hammering out the terms of an unprecedented deal to mitigate the devastating impact of the coronavirus as they prepare for an extraordinary meeting this week. Saudi Arabia and Russia are closing in on an agreement to curb output, which could drain some of the oil surplus, threatening to overwhelm storage tanks and force a wave of abrupt production shutdown, according to delegates involved in the talks. The two energy giants, together with others in the OPEC Plus alliance, will hold a virtual meeting on Thursday to finalize the accord. A deal still hinges on some form of cooperation with the U.S. That may be difficult to achieve with President Donald Trump resisting any partnership with the OPEC cartel that he's vilified for years. But the group is holding out hope for some kind of American involvement and buy-in by others such as Canada and Brazil at a gathering of group of 20 oil ministers scheduled for Friday. Nobody's asked me, so if they ask, I'll make a decision, Trump said, on whether the U.S. would participate in cutbacks. U.S. producers are already cutting back, and they're cutting back very seriously. I think it's happening automatically. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies are set to meet by video conference at 4 p.m. Vienna time on April 9th. Russia and Saudi Arabia are likely to curb their production significantly, said people familiar with the negotiations. But that could depend on the participation of other major producers in a global deal. The G20 meeting the next day may be a more potentially palatable forum for the U.S., Canada, and Brazil. The video conference is scheduled to start at 3 p.m. Riyadh time and last for about 2.5 hours, according to a diplomat involved. A final global deal could pair supplies by 10 million barrels a day or more, a level Trump first invoked last week. However, even that amount may only dent the supply glut, which is estimated as much as 35 million barrels a day. Even if a fudge can be found, some very creative maths is required to deliver the desired headline cut figure, said Amrita Sen, chief oil analyst at Consultant Energy Aspects Limited. We struggle to see how we get to 10 million barrels a day of actual production cuts, even using inflated April baseline numbers. Getting this far in the talks has required a whirl of international diplomacy to overcome the mutual recriminations over who's to blame for the industry's crisis. After Trump first spoke about the prospect of a deal Friday, Moscow and Riyadh traded barbs about who started a price war that is dumping even more unwanted crude onto world markets. A productive discussion between U.S. Energy Secretary Dan Brouillette and his Saudi counterpart Prince Abdullah bin Salman appeared to move the process forward. Crude prices have tumbled by around 50% this year as the economic effects of the coronavirus pandemic have knocked out about a third of global demand. The price crash is so dramatic that it's threatening the stability of oil-dependent nations, the existence of U.S. shale producers, and poses an extra challenge to central banks. Industry officials say that if a deal to cut supply in an orderly way isn't reached, the market will simply force producers to slash output as storage space runs out. Also see, Russia's mini oil storage weakens its hand in OPEC talks. Brent crude has rebounded by about 13% since Trump's comments on Friday and traded near $34 a barrel in London on Tuesday. The physical market is still weak because of the large oversupply. Prices have already turned negative in some corners, and traders have been putting oil into tankers at sea at a record pace to store it. Saudi Arabia and Russia are insistent on a contribution from the U.S., which has become the world's largest producer thanks to its shale revolution. Trump had only hostile words for OPEC on Saturday, threatening tariffs on foreign oil, though at a briefing late Sunday he said he didn't expect he'd have to use them. It's not clear if Russia and Saudi Arabia will require the U.S. to publicly commit to cut production, a challenge in the private, fragmented American industry, or if a compromise gesture would be enough. Alexander Dinkin, president of the Institute of World Economy and International Relations in Moscow, a state-run think tank, said Moscow would like the U.S. to lift some sanctions as a compromise. Instead, OPEC Plus may need to make do with a more passive role for the American shale industry, whose output is already expected to go into decline at current prices, according to Ed Morse, head of global commodities at Citigroup, Inc. I think there is already an understanding between Saudi Arabia, Russia, and the U.S., Morse said. The U.S. is a party to the agreement, in effect, because the price of oil is already reducing drilling activity to an extent that production will likely be down 1 million barrels a day by the end of the third quarter. That still leaves the question of how much of the burden will be shouldered by Russia and Saudi Arabia. The two had led the OPEC Plus coalition's supply management strategy for 3 years until falling out over how to deal with the coronavirus crisis in March. Even now, they're split on how to calculate the cuts, according to a person familiar with the talks. Russia favors using an average of the first quarter output as the baseline, while Saudi Arabia wants to use its current April production. The difference is huge. The kingdom pumped 9.8 million barrels a day on average between January and March. In April, as it wages its battle for market share, it's producing more than 12 million. This article is entitled, "Many Readers Missed the Point of Mayor Peyton's Letter," by Stuart Doreen. Don't look now, but we have a scandal in our midst. At least that is what I see on the Reporter Telegram Facebook page. Mayor Patrick Peyton got himself into a social media jam toward the end of a letter printed in the Tuesday Midland Reporter Telegram and on MRT.com when he wrote, quote, "I believe each one of us knows the higher calling and will readily accept sacrifice in serving others. There will be those who refuse to sacrifice and serve, but if the majority choose the value of service and sacrifice toward and for others, it will negate the minority. Rather than waiting to see what civil liberty has to be taken away for the safety and security of our neighbor, let us voluntarily relinquish our rights in order to sacrifice and serve for the greater good and well-being of our neighbors. We are our neighbor's keeper," unquote. Uh-oh. Did you read what social media heard read? He wants to take their guns. At least that is what those on social media are saying, and the chorus believes he isn't stopping there. Sean Riddle wrote on our Facebook page, quote, "Those who forsake liberty for a little safety will not get it and deserve neither," unquote. Aaron Mays wrote, quote, "Everyone cool with a mayor threatening to take away your civil liberties for the greater good," unquote. Victoria Costilla-Saul wrote, quote, "We have already made of our rights slowly taken or weakened by this kind of mentality. Much blood has been spilled for us to have our freedoms and rights. No, will not give my rights up," unquote. Yes, they were quoting Ben Franklin, having a political science 300-level discussion on civil liberties, bringing up the lives lost at Normandy, and debating whether Peyton was fit for the position. They were missing the point. The mayor doesn't want to impose more regulations, ordinances, laws, or orders on the community. If he did, he would have done so by now. Because while people such as Sarah Spector wrote, quote, "This made me cry," unquote, they apparently have been so teary-eyed that they couldn't see that Peyton has not endeared himself to local physicians who have begged for more stringent rules to be put in place. As I read Aaron Packlaufer's comment, quote, Peyton never read Orwell, huh? Unquote. I wonder if social media commenters read articles and reports that Peyton has examined just about every other city's alleged more strict, quote, shelter-in-place, quote, ordinance, and properly characterize them as nothing different than is what is currently in place in Midland. Peyton, every step of the way, has correctly put Midlanders' ability to make the right decisions ahead of politics. Look, Mayor, if you can't do the job, just step down, Aubrey Mayberry wrote. That comment might be missing the point most of all. It was Peyton, less than 3 months into the job, who didn't back down from the challenge, did not mince words about Midlanders needing to take this seriously, and would not allow government to step in with unneeded regulations. He has butted heads with the medical community and members of the city, Midland City Council, to prevent city government from becoming overbearing. It was also Peyton who put our community on notice about coronavirus before other communities. And that early education appears to have paid off. The number of confirmed coronaviruses in Midland County, knock on wood, trail just about every higher population county in West Texas, El Paso, Lubbock, Potter, Randall, Taylor, and Ector. And yes, the repeated calls by Peyton and Dr. Larry Wilson for social distancing and doing what's right are having an impact. I don't think it is a coincidence that a community educated early and often is on the right end of such a list. I don't think it is dumb luck that while Midland is around the 26th most populated country in the state, it ranks around 33rd in coronavirus cases. Did the mayor really need to bring civil liberties into the conversation without more context? Probably not. It was a slight gaffe from one of our community's best communicators. Did it take away from the message? Not for those who read the entire letter. It was more of the same. Facebook commenter Jim Knox knows. Peyton needs to dumb down what he is saying so it is clear. He's advocating self-control, Cox wrote. Apparently I was wrong. There isn't a scandal after all. This article is entitled Peyton, Stats Show Midland is Up for Challenge by Stuart Doreen. The total number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Midland County trail most other larger population centers around West Texas. The numbers, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services website and other reports Tuesday, are as follows. There have been 30 confirmed cases in Midland County. Midland County trails Lubbock County, 180 cases, and El Paso County, 125. Those are the only two in the region with more than 100 cases. There are a combined 77 in Potter and Randall counties, Amarillo. Midland also trails Taylor County, Abilene, 31, and is tied with Ector County, 30. Midland is ahead of Tom Green County, San Angelo, which has 24 cases. Midland County's population exceeds Tom Green's population by more than 45,000, according to the Census Bureau. Midland County ranked 35th in Texas in the number of most confirmed cases heading into Tuesday. It ranks 26th for population. It has been about 2 weeks since the first coronavirus case in Midland was reported. Mayor Patrick Peyton said, "The statistics demonstrate that Midlanders will react well to a challenge, and that once they understood the information about this invisible enemy, they were ready to do what it takes to protect themselves and each other." Finally, they said, "Okay, we'll fight," Peyton said Tuesday about the community's response. And I think when we put it in terms of a fight, our citizens respond to that. Our community knows how to rally around something when it's real. We're a little slow to believe it at first, but when we do, we get after it. Peyton and other community leaders started the process of coming together, having town halls, and communicating with the public more than a month ago. It started with meetings at Municipal Court Building and City Council Chambers about best practices and appeals to take coronavirus seriously. Then a unified command team was created to provide regular updates. The command team meetings have been press conferences and typically live streamed on any number of social media channels. I don't know if there's a city in the region that has come together as partners as well and as fast as we have, Peyton said, referring to the cooperation of the city, school district, county, and hospital district. Everyone has just rallied around each other and said, what can we get you? How can we help you? And what can we do? And so I think once again, Midland has displayed itself as a shining light in the middle of the basin. Dr. Larry Wilson, Midland Health's chief medical officer, said Midland County residents have done a good job with social distancing, but emphasized now is not the time to relax. Talking through his mask, as recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, after the press conference Tuesday, he cautioned against being overly optimistic because we have better numbers. He warned against what we don't know. People can transmit the virus before having symptoms, and there is no border around Midland to keep residents from interacting with residents from other communities, and work remains to flatten the curve. Texas statistics. Cases reported, 8,262. Deaths, 154. Leading counties. Harris, Houston, 1,809. Dallas, 1,155. Travis, Austin, 502. Bejar, San Antonio, 456. Tarrant, Fort Worth, 452. Denton, 337. Fort Bend, the Houston area, 318. Collin, Dallas area, 306. Galveston, 256. Lubbock, 180. This article is entitled City. Midland County tops 30 coronavirus cases from staff reports. The number of cases in Midland County has reached 30, according to the City of Midland Health Department. Three more cases were reported Tuesday. All three are self-isolating at home, according to the health department. The 28th confirmed case is a male in his 20s who tested at a private provider. His source of exposure is related to travel in the United States. The 29th and 30th cases were both females tested by Midland Health. The source of exposure for both was contact to known case. The first was in her 40s, while the other was in her 20s. The health department also related the following Tuesday. Travel-related cases now trail contact to a known case as the number one source of exposure, 13 to 14. 16 females and 14 males tested positive. The age group with the most confirmed cases remains 20 to 29 years of age, with 14 cases, 46.7% of all cases. The age group with the next most is 30 to 39, with 5. 15 of the 30 confirmed cases have completed isolation, and 7 are reported to have recovered, according to the health department. Midland County is now tied with Ector County in terms of the number of confirmed cases. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled Midland Memorial Hospital, Testing Backlog is Removed. Health departments reports 15 of 27 confirmed cases have completed their isolation. By Stuart Doreen. Midland Memorial Hospital is waiting for results on about 35 coronavirus tests, according to Midland Health CEO Russell Myers. That appears to be a vast improvement, even compared to 1 week ago, when the hospital was waiting for results on more than 100 cases. The long-term backlog has been removed, Myers said during a Tuesday meeting of the county's unified command team. The hospital's website on Tuesday showed 532 tests had taken place at hospital facilities. Of those, 473 came back negative and 22 positive. The other 5 confirmed cases inside the county came from tests taken at private physicians' offices. An official with the City of Midland Health Department said Tuesday that of the 27 who tested positive as of Tuesday morning for COVID-19, 15 have completed their isolation, 9 are isolating at home, 2 are in the hospital, and 1 died. As far as Midland Memorial Hospital is concerned, Myers said census activity is still less than 50%. The number of patients seen Monday at the ER is less than what is typically seen at this time of year, and 10 of 44 ventilators are in use. He said there are 16 patients in the critical care unit, and 4 of those are persons under investigation for coronavirus. Myers said there are 18 people under investigation in the newly established 30-bed COVID unit. There is still ample capacity remaining for ventilators, critical care space, and overall hospital capacity, Myers said. This article is entitled City, Two Die in a Three-Vehicle Wreck on I-20, from Staff Reports. Two people died Monday afternoon in a three-vehicle wreck in the 1900 block of East State Interstate 20, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. The wreck involved a Kenworth truck tractor with trailer, an F-250, and a garbage truck. Midland police and firefighters were dispatched to the scene at about 2:45 p.m. Monday. They observed the garbage truck on its top, and the pickup had heavy rear-end damage. The drivers were walking around and appeared to be uninjured, according to the release. During the course of the investigation, it was determined that the pickup was traveling westbound in the outside lane at an extremely slow speed because of a traffic jam near the La Mesa overpass. The garbage truck was just behind it and was also traveling slowly. The truck tractor was also westbound in the outside lane, approaching the much slower traffic. The driver attempted to make a left-hand lane change to avoid impact as he used his loud audible air horn, but still crashed into the garbage truck's back left corner, according to the release. This caused the garbage truck to lurch forward and hit the pickup. Because of the impact, the garbage truck spun sideways, rolled onto its top, and came to rest along the westbound shoulder. The driver and the passenger of the truck tractor died at the scene, according to the release. Their names have not been released because next of kin had not been notified. They are the 10th and 11th persons to die on roads in Midland County this year, according to Reporter Telegram records. This article is entitled Fundraiser to Help Oilfield Helping Hands, from Staff Reports. A fundraiser to support Oilfield Helping Hands kicks off this week. The Front Porch Permian campaign will provide free family photos taken from a safe distance for those who have been stuck at home, according to James Durbin, president of the Oilfield Photographer. Donations and sponsorships will benefit Oilfield Helping Hands, which is providing meals to those in need. The family photos will be given freely to the families with the sponsor logos arranged on the border of the photos, Durbin said in a press release. The photos will be digitally sent, which means they can be shared freely on all social media platforms by the families. The logo placement for sponsors means everyone who views the photos will see the companies that supported it. Additionally, the families will see and remember the community members who stepped up when times were tough to provide this service anytime they look at their family photos. Our region has been hit with a double blow of low oil prices, and the threat of COVID-19, he said. We know it is a tough time to be asking for support. We will make it through hard times, and we will come out stronger on the other side together. For information about sponsorships or to schedule a photo shoot, contact Durbin at 314-609-1652 or James at theoilfieldphotographer.com or Katie Grimes, president of the Permian chapter of OHH, at 512-635-2331. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. Benjamin Rivera Sr. Benjamin Rivera passed away April 4th, 2020, in Midland, Texas. He was born July 16th, 1952, in Menard, Texas, to Prisciliano and Barbara Rivera. He was survived by his parents, Prisciliano and Barbara Rivera, his brother Samuel Rivera and wife Martina, and his sister Emma Rivera of Midland. His sons Benjamin Rivera Jr., Joseph Rivera, and daughter Patricia Rivera, and several grandchildren. He was preceded in death by grandparents Ramon Rivera, Elisa Hernandez Rivera, Jose Rodriguez, and Henobebe Ramon Rodriguez. A private viewing will be held for immediate family only. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at ntsonline.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Javier Silvas Machuca, Chapo. It is with great sadness that the family of Javier Silvas Machuca, Chapo, announces his passing on Friday, April 3, 2020, at the age of 41. He has gone home to be with his father, Jose Baeza Machuca, and his daughter, Judith Machuca. Javier will be lovingly remembered by his wife of 20 years, Debbie, and his children, Alejandro Machuca, Javier Machuca, and Cheyenne Aguirre. He also leaves behind his precious mother, Daquina Silvas Machuca, and his sister, Macrina, and two brothers, Angel and Jesse Machuca, and many nieces and nephews. Viewing will be on Wednesday, April 8, 2020, at 3 o'clock, Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. John Gary McPherson. John Gary McPherson, 82, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, April 4, 2020. John Gary McPherson was born on October 16, 1937, in Birmingham, Alabama, to parents John L. and Cleo A. McPherson. John Gary McPherson is survived by his beloved wife of 59 years, Anna Owen McPherson, their son John Scott McPherson, and his granddaughter, Susanna Denise McPherson. John Gary McPherson is preceded in death by his parents, John L. and Cleo A. McPherson, and his grandson, John L. McPherson. The family would like to express their gratitude to Midland Hospice, his many doctors and nurses in Midland, and his friends at Homeline Baptist Church. Public viewing will be 8 a.m. until 9 p.m. Wednesday, April 8th, at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be 2 p.m. Thursday, April 9th at Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Due to current restrictions on gatherings, the service will be streamed live at livestream.com/npw. Burial will follow in Rest Haven Memorial Park, which will also be provided via live stream. Pallbearers will be staff of Homeline Baptist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Sue Armstrong. Frances Sue Jackson Armstrong passed away on April 4, 2020, at the age of 85, following a courageous 3-year battle with pancreatic cancer. Sue was born on September 23, 1934, at the home of her maternal grandparents to Alma Marie Haller and Harlan Law Goodwin in Hepzibah, West Virginia. Husband Dick, son Brian, and grandson Trevor Pitts preceded Sue in death. She is survived by her sister, Bonna Reed of Floresville, daughter Jean Pitts, husband David of Midland, daughter Marjorie Armstrong of Marrera, Louisiana, grandchildren Jennifer Casper, husband Kyle, Nicholas Pitts, wife Nicole, Sarah Pitts, and numerous nieces and nephews. A private family service will be held in Connaught, Ohio, later this year, where she will be laid to rest with the rest of the family. The family would like to thank Hospice of Midland for providing excellent care and comfort as she drew near the end of life, and the special caregivers who helped care for Sue in her battle with cancer: Diana, Dottie, Lisa, Maddie, Maria, Bilia, and her favorite nurse, Nicole. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Bertha May Wright. Bertha May Wright, 84, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Monday, April 6, 2020, in Midland. The family will have private services at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. She is survived by her son, Mark Wright, and daughter, Margie Appleton.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 8th. Cactus House finds alternative. Live concert stream is scheduled on Saturday. The story was written by Royal McGregor. Cactus House relied on regularly scheduled live performances to pay the rent. However, since the coronavirus pandemic went into full effect on the east and west coast of the United States, Odessa's live music venue hasn't hosted a show in nearly a month. The last performance at Cactus House before bands started dropping tour dates was Fuming Mouth, a metal band from Boston, on March 12th. Quote, "A lot of things started to close on the western and eastern end of the country," Cactus House co-owner Daniel Price said. Continuing the quote, "As those dropped off, it started to domino inward, and as shows dropped off, people in bands couldn't afford to migrate that far into the country. They were just turning around and going home," end quote. On Saturday afternoon, co-owners of Cactus House, Brian Herrera, Gus Pondo, Andy Russell, and Price, talked about what the live music venue has been doing during the coronavirus. Pondo said this is an opportunity to do some cleaning and renovations. Cactus House has also been working on merchandise to sell on its website. Quote, "We've been reorganizing and resituating things within the venue," Pondo said. Continuing the quote, "We are doing things that we didn't have time to do before. It's hard to clean and keep things organized when there's a different event every night," end quote. Herrera explained, since people can't come to Cactus House, that the owners would bring their live music venue to people's houses with area bands through a live stream. "The live stream would take place on YouTube." Herrera said that Cactus House will test that capability this week when Ghidorah plays at 8 p.m. Saturday. Herrera also said people can donate to Cactus House, which, along with live music, also displays works from artists in the area. Herrera says he believes what the Cactus House learns from the coronavirus can have a lasting effect on how he and the rest of the owners view live music experiences. Quote, "We've kind of thrown that idea around in the past from the beginning," Herrera said of live streaming concerts. "Now with this happening, it's definitely pushed that to the forefront. It's not just a thought that we should do it. We kind of have to do it now," end quote. Russell said it's not only a big hit financially, but it's strange not hosting concerts every week. Cactus House had scheduled spring and summer concerts months in advance. Bands are also tentatively scheduled for the early fall, but the owners all know that can change quickly. Quote, "It has been devastating to a lot of music venues, not just ours, but everywhere in the nation," Russell said. "We all knew it was coming. The writing was on the wall because we saw when people were canceling everything. It's a weird lifestyle change. We are kind of getting adjusted to it all," end quote. The Cactus House owners have differing opinions about how people are going to deal with life after the coronavirus. Pondo said he believes people will be hesitant to gather in large crowds because right now the entire country is attempting to practice social distancing, being 6 feet apart. Quote, even when things do get back to a point where we could have people in here, I think it's still going to be a long-term effect where people might not want to be in large crowds, Pondo said. It's perfectly understandable and reasonable. It's going to be a long-term thing for us, end quote. Price hopes the post-coronavirus effect will be one where people come together to celebrate. Price explained, quote, I'm hoping people come out of this thinking, I really care about my community. I never realized how nice it is just to go to a movie, how nice it is to go to a restaurant with my family. I can't believe we have all these cool places to go. We have venues like Cactus House to go to. We have parks to go to. I feel like people are going to have that response initially. I hope people come out of this with a positive change. End quote. Odessa has first virus-related death. Communications issues pop up. The story was written by Michael Merlo. During Tuesday's hospital coronavirus press conference, hospital officials deferred multiple questions to the Ector County Health Department, one of which was why it took almost 24 hours to alert the public of Odessa's first COVID-19-related death on Monday. Communication has been an issue with local information since the COVID-19 crisis started, as county, city, and hospital officials grappled with how to share public information working through different government entities. As of 2:18 p.m. Tuesday, the Ector County Health Department website reported that there were 30 confirmed coronavirus cases, 266 negative cases, 101 pending lab results, 397 people tested, and one death. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin reported that MCH has 13 total positives, 81 negatives, and 44 pending. They have 6 positives in-house, 4 in CCU on ventilators. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown reported that ORMC had tested 83 people, 9 of which tested positive. They have 61 negatives and 13 pending. She said they have 5 people in the hospital, 4 of which are persons under interest, and 1 confirmed who is on a ventilator. On Monday night, the family of a deceased COVID-19 patient had reached out to media outlets to let them know that their relative had died, while members of the county and hospitals did not verify a death until Tuesday's press conference. When Brown was asked to confirm that a 69-year-old man had died and was positive for coronavirus, she let ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan answer the question. When asked why it took almost 24 hours to confirm the death, Brown answered that they are following a company policy and couldn't share patient-specific information, but that they did share it with the Ector County Health Department and expected the Health Department to share that information on Monday. Saravanan said that they alert the Health Department in real time, so with a death, within the hour, the Health Department will know, he said. Brown said, quote, we will work together as the stakeholders in this process to try to make that information more fluid, end quote. When asked how many are quarantined or how many recovered, Saravanan said that would be a good question for the Health Department. The Ector County Health Department has not been present at the last few press conferences, and Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said that they are not allowed to use Zoom Messenger on their county computers and county phones due to security reasons. ECHD Director Brandy Garcia said to get in touch, the media could email them to set up a conference call. Garcia also said that most of the time The daily hospital press conference is also a problem because, quote, "That's usually when our doctor comes in," she said, "when we have all of our calls and meetings that we're doing here with our staff," end quote. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton on Tuesday said he wants a representative of the health department at the daily Zoom briefings. He said there is no reason that issues on county computers using Zoom should be a holdup, adding that cell phones can also be used to Zoom. The news briefings on Monday changed from in-person news conferences to Zoom conferences due to social distancing. Health department officials typically have not attended in-person conferences and did not participate Monday or Tuesday in the Zoom briefings. Garcia said that the reason that it took so long to relate information that there was a death in Ector County was that they found out through Facebook, like a lot of people. Hayes said that they gathered data for a 24-hour period and that the health department, or the EOC, had received a report for the person who had passed away well after 3 p.m., but only saw it as a number. Quote, "But as far as what their complications were, whether they passed away of COVID-19 or they passed away of a heart attack or what their underlying ailments were, we do not have any of that data. That would fall back on ORMC, and they would need to be responsible for any of the personal data or physical medical condition of that individual," end quote. Garcia said that they got that information from a different source on Monday, so they weren't completely sure if it was a COVID-19 patient until later Monday evening. Hayes said Facebook people knew about the COVID-19 related death before they knew about it. When asked if the Ector County Health Department would issue a press release for other COVID-19 related deaths, Hayes said that would be on the hospitals to do that. Sarah Vannon said that 35 minutes after the patient had died, the medical examiner, Carl Rogers, was notified with information regarding the death and that the patient was COVID-19 positive, and within an hour, the health department epidemiologist Amrinder Kahal called ORMC to confirm that the case was COVID-19 related. ORMC had called him back and did confirm the death was a patient who tested positive for coronavirus. Quote, "The point is, they did call us within an hour of that happening and were able to confirm with the public health department," end quote. Sarah Vannon said he was under the impression that the medical examiner let Kahal know, but then found out that Kahal learned about the death from Facebook. Sarah Vannon said they told the medical examiner that a patient had died and that he was a COVID-19 patient. Stacy Brown also said that ORMC had reported that information to the medical examiner. Quote, "I don't think one person should be trying to blame the other," Sarah Vannon said. "I just feel like there's these communication barriers we need to work through to make sure that we're giving the same message," end quote. COVID-19 news. Ector County confirmed cases, 30. Ector County negative, 266 out of 397 tested, with 101 pending. One death. Midland County, 30 confirmed out of 619 tested, one death. Texas, 8,262 confirmed with 88,649 tested. Total Texas deaths, 154. U.S. cases, 374,329 total confirmed and 12,064 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site. Texas Governor Greg Abbott directed the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and the Texas Historical Commission to close all state parks and historic sites as part of the state's efforts to strengthen social distancing practices and prevent gatherings of large groups of people. Historic sites and state parks were closed to the public at 5 p.m. today and will reopen at the direction of Governor Abbott. In response to the ongoing and rapidly developing COVID-19 crisis, Staples is stepping up to partner with Children's Miracle Network at Medical Center Health System to collect personal protective equipment, also known as PPE. Donations of new, unused, unopened PPE, such as N95 respirator face masks, disposable face masks, face shields, eye protective wear, isolation or surgical gowns, can be dropped off at participating Staples locations. Donations will be shipped to Medical Center Health System to help caregivers during the COVID-19 crisis. Monetary donations will also be accepted through the Medical Center Health System Foundation at mchodessa.com/MCHS-Foundation. Customers should follow appropriate social distancing and other public health guidelines when dropping off PPE donations. Visit cdc.gov/coronavirus for more information. Only unused PPE donations can be accepted. Donations can be dropped off only during business hours at the Staples location at 4509 Navarro Drive in Midland, 79701.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing the front page from the Odessa American, Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. Ellen Noel schedules West Texas Fest for October, by Tony Venegas. The Ellen Noel Art Museum of the Permian Basin announced Monday it will host the 5th annual West Texas Fest on October 9th at the White Pool House, located on 112 East Murphy Street. It's the second largest fundraiser the museum hosts annually, with only Shrimp Fest taking on a larger spotlight, according to the marketing director, Ashley Flores. Shrimp Fest was recently completed in February and hopes that West Texas Fest can be used as a symbol of support for the Permian Basin. With what's going on in the community and in the world right now, we just want to give something to people to look forward to, Flores said. The festival normally offers an opportunity for local breweries, distilleries, and food trucks to showcase their products during this time. Given where things stand with the pandemic, Flores said that it's important to show support for those businesses as well. They're getting hit hard because of everyone being encouraged to stay home. That's one of the things that we want to help them out with also. Having this event is important, Flores says, because it allows them to fund daily operations and other community events. Admission to the museum is free. However, it has been closed indefinitely since March 14th due to the pandemic. The museum is offering virtual events such as Art Tales, a weekly video series that spotlights a different book, and includes an interactive art activity to do at home, as well as its Museum from Home section on the museum's website. Flores also hopes that the event can be bigger this year, given the need to reshuffle events. The Pulling for the Arts that was scheduled for early May was one of several fundraisers and events postponed due to the virus. We're hoping to make it bigger this year, Flores said. Pulling for the Arts in May is postponed for now. We're discussing how to bring that along, and we're trying to bring that along so that we can keep funding a lot of the community events that we put on for the Permian Basin. Among the community programs that the museum is trying to keep going is Art to Go, which is a program designed to bring art education into the elementary schools. The success of the event allows the museum to bring in exhibitions, free community art days, and field trips as part of the Fine Arts Connection program and workshops for all ages. those programs are all currently on hold. As for the event itself, Flores added that the safety of the community is the top priority. In the event that things don't improve by the time that October rolls around, she says that the schedule is flexible to change and wants to make sure that people can enjoy themselves with peace of mind. "We're always keeping the safety of our community in our minds," Flores said. "If during this time that's still ongoing, we'll definitely plan on moving it further down the line."
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. Section A. Man charged with causing girlfriend to fall off back of truck. A 37-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly accelerated and stopped several times while he was driving a pickup intoxicated with his girlfriend hanging on to the back. Sammy Luovano Jr. was charged March 11th with aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury, a second-degree felony. He was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center Thursday. Ector County Sheriff's Office deputies responded to Odessa Regional Medical Center in reference to an assault victim at 2:11 a.m. March 11th, an ECSO affidavit stated. The victim was identified as 54-year-old Olivia Suarez Alcala. She reportedly had a broken left leg and injuries to her shoulder, hip, elbow, and forehead after she had fallen off the back of a truck in the 10,000 block of East Auburn Street. Alcala stated her boyfriend of 7 months, Luovano, had been drinking heavily, was highly intoxicated, and wanted to leave the residence to buy more alcohol, the affidavit stated. Alcala reportedly jumped into the back of the truck to keep him from leaving the house. Luovano put the vehicle in drive and began to accelerate and brake several times, causing Alcala to fall off the back of the truck. Luovano had one bond totaling $50,000 and posted bail Thursday, jail records show. Obituaries for Wednesday, April 8th. Bobby Charles Switzer. Bobby Charles Switzer died April 4th at Baylor Scott & White All Saints Hospital in Fort Worth after a brief illness. Bob was born December 24th, 1939 in Brownwood to Lois Yantis Switzer and Charles G. Switzer. He is survived by his wife, Cheryl, a daughter, Laura Alexander of Carrollton, and husband, James, stepdaughter, Carla Duff of Odessa and Fredericksburg, and husband, Doug, and stepson, Randy Shacherl of Odessa, 4 grandchildren. A private family graveside service will be held in Bangs. A public memorial service in Odessa will be announced at a later date. The family asks in lieu of flowers that donations be made to the Humane Society of Odessa, UTPB, or the Salvation Army. Condolences can be sent to davismorrisfuneralhome.com. Dora Denevi D. Shoup. Dora Denevi D. Shoup, 82, passed away Wednesday, April 1st at Parks Senior Living, where she has resided the last 9 years. Dee was born in Lubbock, March 25th, 1938, to parents Cecil and Beth Turner. She married Gene Shoup in 1985. Dee is preceded in death by her parents, Cecil and Beth Turner. She is survived by her husband, Gene Shoup of Odessa, son Kevin Darby of Gardendale, daughter Christy Ashley and husband Jeff of Tolar, stepson Kyle Shoup of Odessa, 3 grandchildren, 3 step-grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. A celebration of life service will be held at a later date in Dee's honor. Angela Bayer Murray. Angela Bayer Murray of Odessa passed away at UMC Hospital in Lubbock Saturday, April 4th. She was born May 9th, 1965 in Del Rio to George Bayer and Yvonne Runnels. She is survived by her children, a daughter and her family in the Virginia area, a son living in East Texas, and April Bayer from Odessa, her mother Yvonne Runnels of Odessa, sister Karen Bayer of Odessa, brother George Bayer Jr. of Lampasas, a grandson, aunts, uncles, nephews, and nieces. A graveside service will take place in Alpine for the immediate family only. Viewing will be on Friday, April 10th from 6 to 7 p.m. at Frank Wilson Funeral Home in Odessa. Death notices. Roger Lee Freitag. Roger Lee Freitag, 51, died Sunday, April 5th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Aniceto Garcia. Aniceto Garcia, 76, passed away April 3rd in Odessa. Graveside service was held April 8th at the Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements by La Paz Purchase Funeral Home of Odessa. Juan Carlos Morales. Juan Carlos Morales, 25, passed away Friday, April 3rd in Odessa. Chapel service is scheduled for 5 p.m. April 8th at Purchase Funeral Homes of Odessa. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery Thursday, April 9th at 1 p.m. with Pastor Victor Mendoza officiating. Earl T. Warren. Earl T. Warren, 88, of San Angelo, died Tuesday, March 31st. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Harper Funeral Home and Crematory of San Angelo.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.